the proximity to the liturgical revolution of 1970, the liturgical revolution of 69, and it really exploded in the 1970s, that cannot be dismissed, because we're talking about Latin America being essentially overrun by Protestantism. Well, there was a preparation. There was sort of a John the Baptist, a dark John the Baptist, that went in to prepare the way for this false Messiah going in to allegedly save Latin America. And what was that false John the Baptist? It was the new Mass. It was the essentially Protestantized version of Catholicism being imposed globally, including on Latin America, that prepared people to leave the church. Now, this happens in other venues. For instance, look at the charismatic movement in the Catholic Church. The charismatic movement is not Catholic. It doesn't originate from inside of the church. And this is a known fact. I mean, the charismatics who know the history of the charismatic movement will admit this, because, well, they can't deny the history unless they want to either A, be ignorant, or B, lie. But it was the Pentecostal movement in heretical Christianity and in Protestantism that invaded the church, that was Catholics were attracted to the Pentecostal movement within Protestantism. And there was an event that happened, I think it was at Duquesne University, yes, it was at Duquesne University, in the 1960s or 70s, during the time this vacuum was happening of this sort of Vatican II revolution in the church, where the church is seemingly jettisoning her own traditions. I say seemingly, the clergy, much of the hierarchy, jettisoning Catholic orthodoxy, Catholic practice, and so forth. And in that context, there was a vacuum created with this banal new liturgy and this sort of dumbed down, dimmed down religion, desacralized religion. And what you ended up getting was this vacuum. And what filled that vacuum? Well, various things. It was focolare. There was marriage encounter type things, all kinds of different specialized retreats with this flavor or that flavor. But there was also the Pentecostalism known as the charismatic movement. And these Catholics invited a whole bunch of Pentecostal ministers to come to Duquesne University. And at Duquesne University, a Catholic university, they received a blessing. They were anointed. These were priests, I think at least one bishop, and there were Catholic religious, including nuns, being anointed with the Holy Ghost, supposedly, or some spirit anyway, by Pentecostal ministers. And, they were speaking in tongues and doing all of these, strange eccentricities that are performed by Pentecostal so-called Christians. This was taken into the Catholic Church. In other words, a foreign element imported into the Catholic Church, and it remains in the church. I mean, I'm not saying these people aren't Catholic. They certainly have serious problems in their faith. They're baptized officially. They're Catholic. Canonically, we can't deny that they're Catholic. Cardinal Robert Bellarmine, the saint, the great doctor of the church, the Jesuit doctor of the Counter-Reformation, would say that according to his qualifications, they're Catholics. Yet, they imported something foreign, okay? Well, what happened there? Well, in many places, and I know this from experience, I'm sure there's statistics to back this up someplace, in many places, that process of importing the Protestant thing, the non-Catholic thing, the heretical thing, into Catholicism didn't attract non-Catholics to Catholicism. It did the very opposite. It created a release valve so that these people could bleed out of the church and go into these other things. I mean, Pentecostals, let's face it, are probably better at the crazy antics that they do than charismatic Catholics are, because charismatic Catholics are going to perhaps have some Catholic hangups that are going to limit them in their authentic experience of the charismatic thing, the Pentecostal thing, whatever it is they're looking for, whatever dopamine rush or adrenaline rush it is that they're looking for in their false religion. So what happened was, in many places, and I include New Orleans, I include Louisiana where I'm from, I saw this. Catholics bled from the Catholic Church through the Pentecostal, through the charismatic movement, into Pentecostal Christianity, and became overtly, explicitly anti-Catholic. So this should not shock us that we import something non-Catholic, and instead of drawing non-Catholics into the church, it bleeds out of the church Catholics, right? We lose people. We don't gain people. So messing with the religion, tinkering with the religion, either in its traditional praxis or in its doctrine or in its morals, is never good, aside from the fact that it's a lie. Aside from the fact that we're dancing with the devil when we look outside the church for practice, doctrine, and morals, what we end up doing is losing the PR game, not winning it. The best PR is to be true to what we are as Catholics, and to live the moral life, and to live to hold the doctrines, and to teach it, and to keep the traditions, and to show them off because they're beautiful. They are inherently attractive to people of goodwill. So, going on, so the new Mass was intended to appeal to Protestants' sensibilities. It's introduced all over the world, including Latin America. So, as a result, we see Catholics leaving the church, not Protestants coming into it. So rather than attracting the followers of Luther, Calvin, and Calvin to the one true faith, the neo-Protestant vernacular liturgy has deprived Catholics of the sublime beauty and doctrinal riches of the traditional Mass, while acclimating them to the religious culture of one of the most enduring Christian heresies. Again, that's succinct. One of the most enduring Christian heresies is Protestantism. The new liturgy has about it something of the religious culture of Protestantism, and therefore Catholics have been acclimated to that. Therefore, we have lost something of the hedge that kept us from looking at Protestantism as a true form of Christianity, right? The abandonment of the faith by Latin American Catholics comes just 6 decades after the first public proceedings of an ecumenical movement intended to reflect a reconciliation between Catholics and Protestants. For anti-Catholic fundamentalists, however, gestures of goodwill were taken as signs of institutional debility by a moribund entity ripe for predation. That's a great sentence, Joe. It was a moribund entity ripe for predation. That's exactly what it was. The ecumenical movement was supposed to be us making nice with the world. We're not going to have this militant approach to Catholicism. We're not going to seek to evangelize. We're certainly not going to tell people there's no salvation outside the church. That's so offensive. And we're going to do all this stuff. We're going to stop all that sort of traditional Catholic militancy, and people will just love us, and they'll be banging down the doors to come into the church because we're so dang nice. Well, that didn't happen. The opposite happened. Okay, we tore down hedges. We raised the bastions, to use an expression of that monster, liberal theologian Anselm von Balthasar. And instead, people bled out of the church. People weren't banging down the doors to come in. So, ecumenical movement, another historical thing another historical precedent, a historical entity that paved the way for this apostasy in Latin America. So ecumenism eviscerated the traditional Catholic aversion for heresy and rendered Catholics susceptible to proselytism. So formerly we looked at Protestants as people who had a false religion and therefore people that we should evangelize. We should work to bring them into the church as so many great Catholic saints and missionaries have done over the years. To name but one, St. Peter Canisius, the great Jesuit missionary, practically reclaimed Bavaria for the Catholic Church. Bavaria today is known as the Catholic part of Germany. Well, largely due to the efforts of St. Peter Canisius. The Jesuits were not alone in this, but they were very good at it, being the sort of the spiritual marines of the Counter-Reformation. This has been the case ever since the Protestant revolt, that true apostolic souls have worked to evangelize Protestants and bring them back into the church. All right, so it has been only 53 years since the Latin American church moved to embrace so-called liberation theology with its preferential option for the poor. Again, a sort of Marxist simulacrum of the actual teachings of the gospel. and its call for structural change at the 1968 Medellin Conference in Colombia. Yet, it is the states of Central America, the poorest in Latin America, where Catholicism is weakest and where evangelicals have scored their most dramatic gains. Okay, so just unpacking what Joe says there. 1968, the Medellin Conference, they launched this liberation theology thing. So it's supposed to be, helping the poor. Net result? Since 1968, the poorest nations in Latin America are the ones most lost to the church. There's a word for that. It's called failure. So liberation theology doesn't work. It didn't liberate anybody. It enchained people, ensnared people in Marxist doctrine and then heresy, because some people realized that, hey, these people aren't even talking about Jesus, or the Jesus they're talking about certainly isn't the one of the Gospels. It's like a fabricate. It's like a combination of Karl Marx and Che Guevara. It's not the Christian Jesus. It's not the Jesus of the Bible. And who was there to tell people that? American-funded Protestant, quote-unquote, missionaries. Of 33 Latin American and Caribbean countries, newly Protestant Honduras comes in at 29th in per capita gross domestic product, only exceeded in destitution by neighboring two-fifths Protestant Nicaragua and impoverished Haiti and the Marxist wreck of Venezuela. Okay, so it's one of the poorest countries in Latin America. So the preferential option for the poor, liberation theology, all that should have made it really, really Catholic, right? No. It failed. The social justice warriors of the Catholic left have abandoned the salvation of souls, forfeiting religious formation to the purveyors of heresy. In each of these innovations, ecumenism, liberation theology, and liturgical revolution, traditional Catholic belief and praxis were sacrificed for a supposed pastoral benefit.